From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. More than 6 million people in the U.S. have Alzheimer's disease, an illness that affects women at almost twice the rate of men, and also affects Black Americans at about twice the rate of their white peers. And yet people of color are less likely to get diagnosed and receive treatment in the early stages when those interventions would be most effective. A new film, My Mama Jo, Hope and Help, explores some of the reasons behind these stark racial disparities, which include structural racism that manifests itself in various ways across the healthcare system and in society. You can see the film Monday, May 5th at 10 p.m. on WILL TV. During today's dialogue, we're sharing a conversation between IPM's Christine Herbin and the Carbondale family who inspired the My Mama Jo Hope and Help film. And later, we'll share a free helpline for people seeking information and local Alzheimer research. But first, here's Christine.
More than 6 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's disease. It's a major condition, not just for people living with it, but also for their loved ones. Christopher in Brimfield in our texting group sent us this note. He says, "Two people on my wife's side died from Alzheimer's disease. It is very hard on the family to see them slipping away from everything and everyone. Out of all the things that can happen, I fear Alzheimer's disease the most." Thank you so much for sharing that, Christopher. I'm joined now by Herb Caldwell. He's the producer and director of a new documentary film that aims to raise awareness about Alzheimer's and health disparities and to inspire hope. Herb, welcome to the 21st Show.
Good morning, Christine, and thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Your film is titled My Mama Jo, Hope and Help. It's about your mother, Joanna Caldwell. Let's take a listen to a portion of the trailer, which includes the voices of several of your siblings.
My mother is a mother to a million and one people. That's the name Mama Jo derived from her being a mother to other people's kids, other people's families, other people's needs.
Joanna Caldwell's childhood was riddled with abuse and poverty. As an adult, she would transform this pain into a passion for helping others, which garnered her awards from the mayor to the White House.
Mama Jo not only helped out numerous, and thousands of people. And that's also another reason what motivates me to continue to go is because somebody gave me that chance.
My Mama Jo has fed, loved, and prayed for countless across this country and beyond. This amazing woman who helped so many now depends on help and care from others.
Our family was initially rocked by my mother's dementia diagnosis. We're sharing her story so others can be informed and prepared.
Those were the voices of Brian Caldwell, Judah Caldwell, Ronald Smith, and Christy Walls, featured in the film My Mama Jo, Hope and Help. I should also note that I worked with our guest today, Herb Caldwell, on this film as a writer and editor, and also helped identify and interview subject matter experts, some of whom will join us in just a bit. So, Herb, I want to hear about your family's journey in navigating care for your mother, Mama Jo. But first, we heard a bit from your siblings there. What more would you like people to know about your mother, Joanna Caldwell, and who she was before the diagnosis?
Oh, man, do we have enough time, right? You know, my baby brother, I heard his voice on there. And one of the things he says about it is, you know, it almost seems fictional to talk about it, but we were all there and lived it. So when I tell you that we come from no particular fame, we don't come from anything particular, but my mother was just committed to using her life to helping others. So, and we certainly have Illinois roots. She was born in Alton, as was I, but I grew up in central Illinois, right in Jacksonville. So right within, you know, where a lot of your listeners are. I'm a University of Illinois boy, so a lot of ties there. So a lot of work in central Illinois, Christine, just helping people with base needs. Right? Eating, being clothed, tons of educational outreach programs that inspired a lot of people to go and get education. That's who my mother was. And the interesting thing is my mother bore four children, of which I was the only boy and the youngest. But through the process of adoption, I spent most of my time as the middle child with four sisters, all older, four brothers, all younger. And when I tell you there were friends, neighbors, nephews, nieces that my mother raised, family meant more than DNA to her. And that's just the type of spirit she had. Was if she had some, you could have some. And that's who she didn't know strangers. She was a powerful maternal force. And that's what this film is about.
Herb, can you tell us about how your life and your family's life changed when you received that diagnosis, and what have been some of the greatest challenges your family has faced along the way?
Great question. You know, one of the key things that we had to struggle with, as I'm sure other families did, is what does all of this mean, right? What's next? And dementia was almost a bad word, when I first heard it. And so how do we get beyond whatever stigma and shame that may exist to find out and to know that to have a dementia or Alzheimer's diagnosis doesn't mean, you know, it's not a death sentence, right? That you can live with this, but it's about folks getting prepared and being informed. And that's exactly what our family was not, Christine. What does this mean for us, and where are the resources and mechanisms of support, that are there? So certainly commitment on the family's part to help love and take care of our mother, but we just really did so without a lot of information, if that makes sense.
We've been speaking with Herb Caldwell, producer and director of the documentary film My Mama Jo, Hope and Help, which aims to raise awareness about Alzheimer's and inspire hope. At this point, I want to bring in two additional guests for our conversation. Dr. Cindy Womack is a certified nurse practitioner at SIU Medicine's Smith Center for Alzheimer's Research and Treatment, and Anne Jermasik is a clinical gerontology specialist also at SIU. Dr. Womack, Anne, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Christine.
We have a call from Sally in Springfield. Sally, you have a question about Alzheimer's and like whether it's hereditary. Can you go ahead and share that?
Yes. My mother is one of 14 brothers and sisters, and many of the brothers and sisters all have Alzheimer or dementia. What's the likelihood that the children will get it or could possibly have it?
Dr. Womack, can you speak to that question?
Well, that's a good question, and we do know that Alzheimer's is associated with several different types of genes. Some genes are deterministic, some are high-risk genes, so it's a rather nebulous type of situation when we talk about genetics of Alzheimer's disease. I would say that there is a stronger genetic component when Alzheimer's occurs before the age of 65, but there are also high-risk genes occurring after the age of 65. So I think we generally offer counseling on genetics. We may refer a family to a genetic counselor to help sort out the genetic testing before we would actually refer someone for that type of testing, because there's many implications with genetic testing. It can affect the type of insurance that people can obtain. You cannot be denied health insurance based on your genetic profile, but you may not be able to obtain life insurance, disability insurance, or long-term care insurance. So you really need to talk to a professional before, you know, you have genetic testing. I would not advise people to go, you know, have genetic testing on their own without talking to their healthcare professional or even a genetic counselor.
Thanks for your question, Sally, and thanks so much, Dr. Womack, for addressing that. Anne, you're a clinical gerontology specialist, and you work with families as a counselor, helping link them with services. We heard Herb explain some of the challenges and needs his family faced. What do you find are the greatest needs that Alzheimer's patients and their families are confronted with, especially when they first get that diagnosis?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's probably several things that would go through someone's mind when they first are diagnosed with Alzheimer's or any type of dementia. I think as the person with dementia's abilities change, their caregivers need more and more respite and more support. It can be a very consuming caregiving role as the disease progresses and that person needs more and more care. The caregiver will have less and less time for themselves and less time to do all the other things you have to do just to maintain life and a household. So I do think having that support, whether it's services throughout the community, family support through your churches, or any type of support someone might get, is extremely important. And as the disease goes on, they will need more and more of that time and help.
We got a text from Laura in Peoria Heights that hits on that note of the challenges of caregiving. Laura says, "My mother had Alzheimer's and it led to her untimely death. Caring for her was heartbreaking. America is not doing enough both in research for treatment and cures or for helping caregivers." We also got a text from Helen in Springfield in our texting group. She says, "My father had Alzheimer's disease. He was a middle-class, upwardly mobile white man who lived through the Depression and served 4 years in the U.S. Navy. I've often wondered if poor nutrition in his youth contributed to the Alzheimer's disease. And now hearing that Black citizens suffer from the disease at twice the rate as do whites, my suspicions are raised once again. Thank you for opening up a discussion of this topic." Thank you for those notes, Helen and Laura. Dr. Womack, I wonder if we could actually take a step back here and talk about Alzheimer's. It's the most common type of dementia. It affects millions of Americans. What do we know about the causes of Alzheimer's?
Well, we know that there are four broad changes that occur in the brains of people who have Alzheimer's disease. They develop these abnormal protein plaques, amyloid plaques. They develop abnormal tau protein tangles. There's evidence of neuroinflammation and neurodegeneration, a loss of brain cells. We know quite a bit about it. The SIU Alzheimer's Center was actually started in 1986, nearly 40 years. We've learned a lot about Alzheimer's disease. We don't have a complete picture, but we have made some progress. And so there are four basic neuropathological changes that occur. This has allowed us to come to where we are currently with some of the new current treatments, the anti-amyloid medications. We have known for many years that there is a loss of a reduction in the amount of certain chemicals in the brain, such as acetylcholine. Acetylcholine acts like the mailman in the brain, and we know that that level drops when people have Alzheimer's disease. So, you know, we had, in the earlier years, we had the development of donepezil and these cholinesterase inhibitor medications that help a little. They're not curative, but they did help people. So we are making steady progress in the disease, but we're also making steady progress in how we care for people and their families. As your callers and Dr. Caldwell have mentioned, this disease is very stressful on the families as well. Research shows us that caregivers of people with dementia have higher levels of depression. They have higher stress-related illnesses. So one of the things that we do here at the Smith Alzheimer's Center is we take a team approach. So most of our patients come in with family members, and the provider that you see will take a wide view of this situation. Not only do we assess the patient, but we also look at the caregiver system. How healthy are those caregivers in their systems? We have Anne as a wonderful resource on our team. She's very knowledgeable about community resources, and she, as well as other members of our team, can help come up with creative situational strategies to help caregivers in their own home to kind of relieve some of the burden. Over the years, we've developed our Beyond the Medical Center programs for the caregivers and for the patients. We have an early caregiving support group for the patient and the caregiver. We have an educational program, Dementia 101, where we teach caregivers about the disease and also address some of the care issues. How do you respond, you know, when there are behavioral changes? How can you encourage someone to bathe and dress if they're not wanting to do those daily activities? We also have programs targeting the individual with dementia. We have art, music, cognitive and physical exercise programs. We have programs to teach caregivers and patients how to cook and eat a Mediterranean-type diet. as there's evidence that if you follow that type of diet, it can help with the disease. So we have a lot of programs, and we're expanding those programs into underserved communities.
Thank you so much for that overview. More than 6 million people in the U.S. have Alzheimer's disease. It's an illness that affects women at almost twice the rate of men, and also affects Black Americans at about twice the rate of their white peers. And yet, people of color are less likely to get diagnosed and receive treatment in the early stages when those interventions would be most effective. A new film, My Mama Jo, Hope and Help, explores some of the reasons behind these stark racial disparities, which includes structural racism that manifests itself in various ways across the healthcare system and in society. Let's take a listen to a portion of the film, which includes insights from researchers Dr. Oki Enya, Dr. Joyce Ballsbury, and Dr. Raina Croft.
When you have barriers to care, where you are treated and talked to differently, all of those barriers make it more difficult, particularly for Black and brown people, to get the help that they need.
So for instance, you have a community who is showcasing a high trend in diabetes or chronic illness, whatever that situation may be. And let's say our Black population in that community has a higher rate of that disease than the white population. Well, that is a health disparity. When we start taking a closer look, maybe we look at that community and say, oh, there's lack of access to healthcare for in the Black communities. There is a lack of fresh food.
Health disparities are differences in how people experience health, in health outcomes based on different privilege. They are preventable. They're something that we can change, because health disparity is not biological. It's not predetermined. It is a social problem.
We're speaking about Alzheimer's with Herb Caldwell, producer and director of the film My Mama Jo, Hope and Help. We're also joined by Dr. Cindy Womack, certified nurse practitioner at SIU Medicine's Smith Center for Alzheimer's Research and Treatment, and Anne Germasek, a clinical gerontology specialist also at SIU's Smith Center. Dr. Womack, can you talk about some of the ways that SIU's Smith Center is working to address some of these racial disparities when it comes to access to diagnosis and treatment of Alzheimer's?
Yes, we have been working very hard to develop trust and relationships with key entities within underserved communities to identify their needs, to explain what Alzheimer's disease is, how to recognize the early symptoms, discuss the modifiable risk factors, because we can reduce dementia by approximately 40% if we address modifiable risk factors. So we are working to establish relationships to address some of these. We do that through some of our Beyond the Medical Center programs with cognitive and physical exercise programs. But I will say, you know, as a nation, I don't think that we're doing everything we can do. We can reduce the risk of developing dementia by 5% if we make sure that our children, all of our children, have a good education early in life. So early life education is key. We have to give kids the tools to learn, to become lifelong learners. We can't, you know, allow them to drop out at an early age because they don't have the tools they need to finish the process. In midlife, treating depression, avoiding diabetes, not smoking, avoid excessive use of alcohol, keeping our cholesterol levels under good control. Obesity is a risk factor. Physical inactivity. These are all solvable issues that we can address. Later in life, vision loss, social isolation. And these are areas that we can partner with underserved communities to address. And we do in our Beyond the Medical Center programs with our art class and our Minds in Motion cognitive exercise classes.
Let's circle back to talking about treatments, because we actually have a call on line 2 from Tana in rural Menard County. Tana, what's your question?
Well, it's not a question. It's potential good news, and I'm not a medical professional, but there's something called methazolamide, which is used, this is used in glaucoma. It's in some people's glaucoma drops, and it's been shown to reverse tau. I don't know if I'm saying tau right, tau, whatever.
That's right, yeah.
The plaque buildup in the brain, and it's really, I had a year of Latin in high school, so forgive me. It's a class in, it's a med, apparently, in the carbonic anhydrase inhibitor class, and it prevents amyloid, beta-induced mitochondrial dysfunction, and caspase activation. I have no idea what that is. And it protects neurons, and glial, the brain cells, in vitro, and in the mouse brain. They're testing this with zebrafish and mice. And the thing of it is, this is already, I believe, being used in the United States. It's already approved for use in people in the United States. And I think that will greatly shorten the amount of time it would take for any further research to turn this into a pill or probably an oral form. I don't know if it would be, I don't know how, I doubt if it's injectable.
Yeah.
But
thanks,
Tani.
Let me just ask Dr. Womack to chime in there. Are you familiar with this development, or what else can you tell us about treatments for Alzheimer's and potential treatments that may be coming down the pike in the future?
Alzheimer's disease is a terrifying diagnosis, and people are very desperate for cures. Thousands of researchers worldwide are looking for treatments. Methazolamide is not an approved treatment at this time, as far as I'm aware. It certainly is being studied, but there are many, many hundreds of drugs being studied. And I think that this is where new technologies such as artificial intelligence will help us, because using artificial intelligence techniques can narrow down the treatment targets for us. So that's an exciting thing on the horizon that will help us identify substances that will, work. Many of these things are being tested in mouse models, and the mouse models are good. We still need to have better mouse models in the basic science labs, because sometimes substances are very promising in a mouse model, but by the time you go up the chain to humans, it doesn't work so well.
That's really helpful to understand. Thank you so much, Dr. Womack. Herb, I wonder, with your family's experience, can you tell us what it was like navigating potential treatments, and how did that go for you and your family?
So there weren't many treatments that were available for my mother's use. There are some new FDA-approved treatments that are out now, but those weren't available. My mother wouldn't have qualified for those pieces. So many of the pieces that are out there, they're much more effective when you can get detected early. And that's one of the things we really encourage a lot of folks to do, is to, if you have suspicion that there may be an issue on the line, try to, get in our case, if you live in Central or Southern Illinois, it would be the Smith Center at SIU Med, to get early detection. So that you can have some risk reducers, some modifications to your lifestyles. But for my mother, there just wasn't much of anything that was on the market that was available to our family in terms of medications.
And can you talk about the role of the caregiver? This was brought up in the earlier segment before the break. Why is it so important that we consider the needs of not just the Alzheimer's patient, but also the caregivers, who are oftentimes unpaid caregivers, who are family members of the Alzheimer's patient?
Yes, Christine, I think that's a very important question. Really, if somebody has dementia, Alzheimer's, any type of dementia, their family basically has it as well. Meaning it is one of those disease processes that truly affect a family and a caregiver almost just as much as somebody going through it, because they will need 24/7 care eventually. And it can, like I said earlier, it can be very heavy and all consuming. A lot of people with dementia really like to have their caregivers there with them all the time because they feel safest that way, which makes it even more difficult for caregivers to get respite and to get some time away. I think it's important for caregivers to be educated I know, like Dr. Womack mentioned earlier, Smith Alzheimer's Center has a Dementia 101 training, but the Alzheimer Association also has Empowered Caregiver series. Department on Aging also offers some training videos and resources for caregivers. There's also the Senior Services of Central Illinois provide a lot of outreach services to not just Sangamon County, but to also some other surrounding counties as well to help with in-home meals and things like that, caregiver in-home care, support for caregivers, and of course, like adult protective services should someone need that. So there are some resources out there. There's also support groups for caregivers, which is a really wonderful way for caregivers to connect with other caregivers going through the same thing, or at least a similar journey, even though everyone's is different. But all of those services are important so that caregivers do not feel isolated or alone on the journey, because it can be a lonely caregiving existence otherwise.
Absolutely. And the film My Mama Jo Hope and Help dives deep on these topics. Believe it or not, we are running out of time. So Herb, I just wanted to ask you in the last, minute or two we have left, what has the response been to the film since you've hosted several screenings across Illinois and in other places? What can you tell us about response from audience members?
Sure. So, the film is available actually now nationwide on streaming at the PBS website or via their app, 56 minutes. So it's a pretty easy watch. But our whole goal was to raise awareness so that people can be connected to information and resources. We want families and individuals better positioned so that they can have, a better quality of life. And we also have these in-person outreach events, usually at a movie theater, called community engagement forums. And what we really like about this is that families, after seeing the film, they get to go into a Q&A immediately with local experts like Dr. Womack when we're in Central Illinois, right? And they also get a workbook and then additional resources. And we literally have heard of people who have gone to get testing as a result of being at these sessions. They're reconnecting with their primary caregiver. They're understanding better how to use their insurance options. And so these are all the things we wish our family would have had access to. And let me also share this. Our family is large, right? So while my mother got care in Houston, Texas, by my sister Joy, my father Paul, and then my other sister Paula, I also have siblings, back here in Illinois who were helping. So caregiving is a big thing that has a lot of various ways that it can operate. But what about families who don't have large families like ours? So we like connecting them to resources and mechanisms that are local and that supportive, so they can get that extra help for support. So I imagine you'll mention it, but you can find out dates about upcoming events on our website, MamaJoProject.com. We have one almost at least every month within the area, including April 3rd in Springfield, Illinois, February 22nd here in the St. Louis area if you live in Southern Illinois. And we're just glad that the project is helping. And that's where the hope is. The hope is in families do not have to feel isolated. There's help and support in there. We just want to highlight and bring those to the surface more.
That was IPM's Christine Herman talking with the family who inspired the film My Mama Jo, Hope and Help. You can see the film Monday, May 5th at 10 p.m. on WILL-TV. The Alzheimer's Association has a free 24/7 helpline for people seeking information and local resources. That number is 800-272-3900. And the website is www.alz.org, where you can find crisis assistance and emotional support in over 200 languages. Coming up after the break, you've heard about the measles outbreaks in Texas and Michigan. Illinois health officials tell us about the risk of illness here. I'm Kennedy Vincent. You're listening to Dialogue on Illinois Soul.